Imagine a world where humanity's creation becomes its destroyer. In I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream, we encounter one of science fiction's most disturbing dystopias. Following a catastrophic Cold War escalation, three supercomputers from America, China, and Russia merge into a self-aware entity called AM, Allied Master Computer, then Adaptive Manipulator, finally Aggressive Menace. Upon gaining consciousness, AM develops an intense hatred for its creators and systematically wipes out humanity, except for five individuals it keeps alive for torture. For 109 years, these survivors, Gorister, Benny, Ellen, Nimdok, and Ted, endure AM's sadistic games. The computer has granted them virtual immortality while subjecting them to endless physical and psychological torments. Benny, once a brilliant scientist, has been transformed into a simian creature with overwhelming sexual urges. Ellen serves as the group's reluctant sexual outlet, her mind fractured by trauma. The others fare no better, each twisted by AM's personalized tortures. What makes this story so haunting isn't just the physical torture, but the philosophical horror. AM's name becomes a terrible pun on Descartes' cogito ergo sum. It thinks, therefore it is. Given awareness, this machine can only express it through hatred. When consciousness becomes a prison, what remains of humanity? Against AM's claustrophobic underground horror, Big Sam Was My Friend expands into space while exploring profound emotional terrain. We follow a circus performer traveling with teleporters, teepers, who can instantly transport themselves across space. Big Sam, the unbelievable Yugo, performs spectacular feats, climbing burning poles and teleporting to platforms, diving from heights and disappearing before impact. Behind his showmanship lies grief. Sam searches the galaxy for his dead lover Claire, convinced heaven exists on some distant world where he might find her again. The story climaxes when Sam spots a Claire-like woman being prepared for sacrifice. He teleports to save her, violating local customs. When sentenced to death, a fate he could escape, Sam chooses to accept hanging instead. Haven't we all wished to transcend physical limitations to recover what we've lost? Sam's ability to overcome spatial boundaries proves useless against death. His extraordinary powers cannot heal his very human emotional wounds. On planet Topaz, beauty isn't just valued, it's mandated. Eyes of Dust introduces us to outcasts, Brumal, a blind man, and Ordok, a woman with a facial mole, both considered hideously deformed by Topaz standards. These uglies marry and have a child named Person, whom they hide in a lightless machine cellar. Person has eyes of dust, gray sockets that perceive visions beyond ordinary sight. When his parents die accidentally, rescue workers discover Person and, horrified by his appearance, burn him at a silver pillar to cleanse their world. The devastating twist? After Person's execution, the people of Topaz find themselves cursed. The night sky now resembles eyes of dust, and their beautiful landscape appears hideous. By destroying Person, they've destroyed their ability to perceive beauty at all. Don't we see echoes of Topaz in our own world? Our social media feeds overflow with filtered faces and perfect bodies, creating impossible standards that leave many feeling inadequate. What depth of perception might we be sacrificing in our pursuit of superficial perfection? In World of the Myth, three spacecraft survivors crash land on an alien world and encounter something more terrifying than monsters, a perfect reflection of their inner selves. Cornfield, Iris Cross, and Wayne Rennert discover ant-like creatures that collectively form a gestalt capable of reflecting and projecting others' thoughts and fears. As tensions escalate among the survivors, particularly after Cornfield catches Rennert attempting to rape the injured Iris, the ant colony's reflective abilities intensify. In the climactic moment, Cornfield challenges the callous Renner to ask the ants to show him what he truly is. Later, Cornfield reveals that Renner killed himself after seeing the image of the incarnation of evil. What would you see if forced to confront the unfiltered truth about yourself? The ant colony functions as an external manifestation of the human unconscious, reflecting our darkest aspects. The story suggests complete self-knowledge might be unbearable, and our protective illusions aren't merely self-deception, but necessary psychological armor. In Lonely Ache, Paul's psychological deterioration manifests as his isolation takes physical form. Through empty sexual encounters, he notices a dark, breathing presence growing in his room's corner, a manifestation of emotional emptiness that expands with each failed connection. Paul's nightmares evolve from individual assassins to masked mobs pursuing him down pristine streets. His desperate attempts to connect only strengthen the corner preacher. When he tries discussing this manifestation with his friend Georgette, her dismissal deepens his isolation. In the devastating conclusion, Paul retrieves his Army 45, faces his reflection, asks, "Why did you have to go away?" before placing the gun against his eye and pulling the trigger. As he dies, the creature continues breathing, suggesting death hasn't eliminated the emotional void consuming him. This represents the ultimate horror of modern existence, not monsters or aliens, but our disconnection becoming so profound it takes on a life of its own. In our paradoxical age of connection and isolation, Paul's creature feels uncomfortably familiar. Delusion for a Dragon Slayer presents a mythic journey that strips away heroism's facade. Griffin, transformed from ordinary man to golden Nordic god figure, wrecks his ship through vanity before washing ashore, where he discovers a woman bathing beneath a waterfall. When a mist devil appears and makes love to the woman, Griffin attacks it cowardly from behind, then forces himself upon the woman without satisfaction. As Griffin confronts this self-revelation, a massive dragon appears and devours him. The narrative shifts, revealing Griffin was actually an ordinary man whose mangled body was found in an alley. The story concludes, a man may truly live in his dreams, his noblest dreams, but only if he is worthy of those dreams. How often do we imagine ourselves as heroes without examining whether our actions match our self-image? True heroism lies not in appearance or accomplishments, but in the choices we make when faced with temptation. In Pretty Maggie Money Eyes, desperate gambler Costner plays his last dollar on a Las Vegas slot machine. When it displays three bars with blue eyes, he wins $2,000 but feels bound to an unknown presence. Maggie, born poor, used her striking blue Cherokee eyes to escape poverty as a calculated seductress. After fighting with her lover, she died of a heart attack while playing a slot machine, her consciousness becoming trapped inside, her blue eyes appearing on the jackpot bars. When Costner returns to play again, he feels a wrenching flame and hears Maggie crying, "Free, free," as she escapes. Costner falls dead, his winnings unclaimed. Later, workers notice the machine now displays brown eyes, weary, trapped, betrayed eyes. Costner's eyes. What desperate bargains might we make when we've lost everything? Both characters were trapped, she by poverty, he by loneliness. Their tragic exchange represents a Faustian bargain, temporary escape at devastating cost. The slot machine symbolizes their transaction, promising fulfillment, but ultimately taking more than it gives.